I'm Dan Runcie, and you're listening to Trapital. And today, we're going to talk all about WhatsApp. The startup landscape is full of companies that grew the traditional way. They started in the US or they started somewhere in Western Europe, and they grew from their coastal elite circles and then slowly adopted more and more users as a result. WhatsApp now has over 2 billion monthly active users. Over 200 million companies rely on WhatsApp for business communications, and it is the economic engine for the largest countries in Latin America. And in my social circles, WhatsApp is becoming more and more prevalent. A lot of those group chats that used to exist on GroupMe and Telegram or in iMessage and other places, a lot of them have transferred over to WhatsApp. And I continue to hear more about small business owners, creators, artists, and others that have relied on WhatsApp for their own communication with fans, their own e-commerce, and how they've built and grow their business. But like many apps in the family of Meta apps, first, you gain the traction and the followers, but eventually, you need to make some money. And that's always been the biggest question for WhatsApp. What does the future of monetization look like? Not just for the people that use the product, but for where the product sits itself within Meta's ecosystem. Is this a product that could rival Instagram and others in terms of the revenue and the value that they generate for the business? Or is it more beneficial as that sticky platform that can help keep users retained and make sure that more of the conversations and the apps that people are using is something that is owned by the Meta suite of products? And that's what we're going to talk about today. We're joined by Tati Sirsano with Media Research, and we're going to break it all down. So hope you enjoy. Let's dive in. This episode of Trapital is presented by State Farm. When you start a new business, your first reaction might be to say, woohoo, yes, or booyah. But one thing to say that could be a huge help is, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, State Farm will be there with the coverage that fits your need, whether your business is growing or just open its doors. State Farm agents are small business owners too, so they know what it takes. They can help you create an insurance plan that fits your small business needs and budget. And when you need help, State Farm is there to answer your small business questions or help you file a claim and get you back in business. With State Farm, you can worry less about the unexpected and focus more on your business. With a State Farm agent, you know someone is helping you achieve your goals. And just say, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. All right, we're here with Tati Sirsano from Media Research, and we're going to talk about WhatsApp. And I want to start with sharing, I guess, my personal experience with WhatsApp and then want to hear yours. I have a lot of family that lives in the West Indies. A bunch of them had pretty deep group chats that have been going on well before anything in the US. And slowly but surely, any group that I was involved with that had more than six or seven people eventually moved on to WhatsApp. And it just feels like this train is continuing to move in that direction.
I remember using it a lot in like high school because as I grew up in Miami and basically like 50 to 80% of the people I went to high school with were first generation or second generation immigrants, and they were all just using WhatsApp and they were using it to talk to their friends, but it was also a major way to connect with family back home.
You've talked about wanting an everything app. Isn't this the closest to an everything app?
This is a fascinating entry point to the super app conversation because I feel like that would theoretically make my life easier in a lot of ways, but then I also see the concerns about it from anti-competitive standpoint, from like a surveillance standpoint. Maybe it's good to have things be a little bit more fragmented, but at least in terms of like my everyday experience as a consumer, I'm personally super frustrated all the time by like how many different apps I feel like I need to keep track of.
So talk to me more about the high school uses.
Yeah.
Do you use it differently than how you used iMessage or texting or any other social media apps, direct messaging? Was the way that you and your friends used WhatsApp different?
Like the cultural feel of the platform was a little bit different than using something like iMessage or texting, where it was almost like more casual and like a place to send jokes and memes. And there were features in that domain, I think, before iMessage started to have them. It was a little bit like more like creative and casual and silly. And then it was almost as if everything else was more for a formal message. BBM vibes, if anybody remembers that, where you could just go on and message anybody. And it wasn't such a having to get someone's number and like a whole thing.
It was very easy to forward or have an image that came from one group chat and then pasted in another one or something like that. And of course, this is a pretty common thing now for most of these platforms, but that felt new and unique then. So I remember seeing it there, and that was a very easy way for people to just share memes and share all day long about different things. So in terms of the lightheartedness, I can definitely echo that.
WhatsApp was from the beginning just built as a very quick and easy messaging app. So maybe it just had all these features in mind before other companies could transition their own apps to be that way.
And that's good context for how everything started and why Meta was even interested in WhatsApp in the first place, because Mark had said, we acquired WhatsApp because they were ahead of us in messaging the same way that Instagram was ahead of us in photos. And the two things with those apps is that those are mobile first startups. iPhone starts in 2007, the App Store starts 2008, and then you get the explosion of all of these platforms that are there. Facebook, it took some time to figure out monetization, figure out all those things. So they were acquiring each of these companies. Of course, Instagram is one of the most valuable acquisitions that we've seen. If you broke out Meta's market cap and how much of that is responsible for Instagram, it's $700 billion, if not close to a trillion at this point. WhatsApp, it's a little bit fuzzier. How much money it makes, I think, has been a bit debatable. But the role that it plays within the Meta ecosystem now is probably even more valuable than the money that it generates.
And even just before we get into that, just to add some more context to the mobile first thing, I think this is a trend that we see not just in messaging apps and in social, but also in lots of other things like music creation. The companies that are starting up there that are making music making software, it looks nothing like a traditional DAW, because why would it? Because the way that people got started was just so different. So I think that's a trend that we're seeing in a lot of ways, not just in messaging. That's super interesting.
The one thing, though, that I think is unique about WhatsApp, unlike most apps that start in the Western world and then expand from there, it was the opposite approach, where the value prop was more so for the rest of the world. And then it's the US and UK and Western Europe and these other markets that started to catch on earlier. Because when this started, people were still paying for text messages.
Right.
Remember the whole era of free nights and weekends and 15 cents, 10 cents to send a text message, but maybe it was a little bit less to receive. It sounds archaic now, but this was back in the days of T9 and all of those things. That's the world that WhatsApp was started in. And that was the main mode of things. So when people were paying a dollar to access the platform, that's something that they were willing to pay. But of course, that was something that they eventually got rid of a couple years after, because this is a social network platform and Meta's biggest strength is that you want to lower the friction, because the benefit is adding users and increasing the network effect.
And I think in addition to SMS rates just being so much more expensive in these other parts of the world, there was more of a need for something like WhatsApp, which is part of the reason it drove the company to start there. I think also they recognized that there were so many people who had immigrated from their original country, their family immigrated, and they needed a way to keep in contact with their family back home that wasn't long distance phone calls that would cost them an arm and a leg. So I think that was also a really strong use case that continues to be one of its strong use cases.
You saying that brings me flashbacks of the amount of time I've been with my grandmother or my mom buying calling cards at convenience stores to call family in Jamaica, or even call family in the UK as well. It was this cycle of going to buy these calling cards and then figuring out what someone needed and then going to the Western Union to go send someone money. This whole ecosystem that now you fast forward, WhatsApp has solved a lot of that pain point. Now easily with this one app. The other thing that fascinated me with WhatsApp is thinking about other apps that this was true for, other platforms where the adoption and use case of it grew more so from the west of the world before we saw it here. And these may not be exact comparisons, but work with me as we walk through this. So of course, YouTube started in the US, but I think that a lot of the adoption, as you and I have done several episodes on YouTube, most of the listening happens outside of the United States. A lot of the artists that are blowing up there, when we've done our YouTube versus Spotify comparisons, it's a much more international base. Another company that came to mind is Cash App. Although Cash App is very US-centric, even within the US, there's something about how when companies start in the US, they're more likely to start on the coast, and their early adopters are more likely to be part of these coastal elite networks where the willingness to pay is very high. There's a lot of cultural influencers and your access to people that have money for investing or that have channels to help increase it. But Cash App was a company that took the opposite approach. They relied on celebrity influencers and hip-hop artists, and then some of their largest base was in the South and other areas. That was the complete opposite of Venmo, which you would probably pin as its most closest competitor. So on a personal note, I've always been fascinated by the companies that were able to grow in that opposite way.
I think that also brings to mind some music streaming companies like AudioMac, which is, of course, a U.S. company, but that has made a lot of headway in Africa. Like even the now defunct TikTok Music was going to start with places like Brazil. YouTube, too, they represent like this next generation way of engaging with the thing at hand, which I think goes back to what we were talking about with these places that were actually later to come onto the internet. We actually end up having a more advanced way of interacting with it. Think about the TikTok Music app, which was a completely different, more interactive, participatory way of engaging with music, and AudioMac having some of those features as well. I think it fits in with that theme of being mobile first and next generation first and not having the same ties to the traditional way that things were built.
I think that when you're relying on the rest of the world, to the points that you mentioned, it requires so much more understanding of cultural context and the infrastructure of how things exist. Speaking about AudioMac, if you want to do business in Nigeria and West Africa, you need to understand how the telcos work and what relationship they have with music and with business more broadly, because you're going to be relying on them much more to distribute music. Compare that to the U.S., you don't need to have a relationship with T-Mobile or Sprint in order to run a DSP in the U.S. And then similarly, when you think about consumer behavior, especially as it relates to e-commerce, which has been one of the main ways that WhatsApp has been making money in recent years, understanding how important that is for commerce, relationships between companies and how people message, it's more about how do you integrate yourself with those services. And many of those customs are very different than what we see in the U.S. But if you're willing to lean into that, then there's success to be had.
I'm curious what you think about WhatsApp having people messaging businesses all the time, because that's just not something that we do really in the U.S. Are you messaging businesses in any other way? I don't feel like that's a common thing. And it's interesting because I'm like, is that something that, because WhatsApp was adopted in these places and WhatsApp allowed for these features to happen, people use them? Or is there something different where people were more interested in those features than people in the U.S. would be? Is there some cultural thing there?
Oh, you mean when you get a DoorDash order, you don't text the driver back and forth?
Maybe I'm overthinking this, but part of me is like, our relationship with the companies that we buy from in the U.S., it's Amazon, it's DoorDash. It's not as small business and community oriented as I think other parts of the world are.
Some of this does exist in the U.S., but the reasons that it probably hasn't taken off is something we should talk about. So Superphone, that's their main thing. I know that when Superphone started, the community does a lot of this too now, but when Superphone first started, I think it was definitely positioned as a artist or influencer type of thing. But they actually had a lot more success with companies like PC Richard & Son and others, where if people want to get updates on a particular order or things like that, that's where they are getting their information. And it just increases the likelihood of being able to close a transaction, make sure they have updates and things like that. So I don't necessarily use those tools as much, but I've seen a bit of that, even to some extent, getting updates about a flight that's coming in. And I do think that WhatsApp has a lot of that, and probably why I think it works more effectively outside of the U.S. Part of it is very cheap and easy to be able to send a SMS back and forth and have that as a mechanism, the way that a lot of the apps and websites that we use here use so much bandwidth, so much infrastructure that rely on fiber and things like that in a way that it probably isn't as much in other places. So when I was looking through the stats of doing research on this episode, that's where things stuck out. Like, oh, it's not just small business. It's L'Oreal that in a huge country like Brazil, 25% of the business that they did last year for DTC online sales were through WhatsApp. That's fascinating, right? It isn't just these small mom or pops things. It's companies like Air France. It's others that have these extensive relationships, especially in these countries. It's like, if you want to do business in this country, having a strong WhatsApp presence, I think, is key. And I think part of it could be bandwidth and infrastructure limitations, but I think that also lends itself to the consumer behavior habits that we see that exist.
I think that I would much prefer getting those types of messages on a platform like WhatsApp, because in the texting experience with that is just so clunky. It's like SMS rates may apply. It feels more like spam. And when a business asks for my phone number, I'm so hesitant to give it because I don't want that kind of stuff clogging up my messages. Whereas I think the way that WhatsApp has made it a lot more like streamlined and seamless and just less clunky, I think I would like that.
Part of the challenge is, or at least part of the benefit of why it works well on WhatsApp, is because most of that stuff is on a different tab.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's not in the same feed as your group chats or your people that you talk to internationally, or sometimes even in the US as well. That's always the difference. And I think that on SMS, both of us being iPhone users, all that stuff sits in the same chat, right? It creates an opportunity to separate and create something truly off of that in a way that iMessage has not.
WhatsApp is a great messaging app and I would like to use it more, but my friends just aren't using it as much. So it's like just getting people to adopt a new way of messaging each other, or even just to adopt a new app at all, is a challenge.
Do you feel like you would prefer to have it for one-on-one communication though?
I think I would prefer to have it because I could have these, again, these things all in one place. Well, no, like I should have the groups in one place. I wish that I could just have that as a tab in iMessage, but we can't, because you can't have more than whatever number of members in a group chat on iMessage.
I think that after six people, the iMessage group chats start to break a bit. And that's where I think something like WhatsApp starts to make more sense. I think that part of the thing that I'm eager to see, I've often thought that encryption is one of the things that they've tried to push as like a strong value prop anytime I've seen WhatsApp commercials, especially compared to iMessage, and even more so compared to just sending a standard SMS text message. Part of me wonders, does the average consumer care as much about encryption as they probably should?
If you ask people, do you care about your privacy and your data privacy, they'll say yes. But like in practice, would people stop using WhatsApp if it stopped being encrypted? Probably not. I don't think that people would leave like in droves. I think we're also at this era of the internet and of data collection, unfortunately, where people just are like, there's just no way that I can be a person in the world without giving away my data online. Like, how can you exist?
On one hand, I appreciate that WhatsApp hasn't polluted my feed with text messages about political campaigns and everything that we get on regular text messages. Yeah. But on the other hand, I also get added to random investment communities and people trying to trade Forex and all this other crap, right? That I don't get as much. Maybe I get a little bit on iMessage either. So encryption or not, I still get my fair share of WhatsApp spam.
It's such an interesting selling point that has become like the thorn in Mark Zuckerberg's side, where so many of the things that are needed to make WhatsApp a bigger moneymaker would mean taking that end-to-end encryption away. And they haven't fully done that yet. They've made moves to allow for some types of advertising and things. They haven't fully done away with it. And I think it's part of the reason why WhatsApp is just this really fascinating paradox from a business perspective, where like Meta, Facebook paid, like you said, $22 billion for it. And it's the number one messaging app in the world, yet it contributes so little revenue to Meta. And the encryption is part of the reason, but it's also part of the reason people joined in the first place. So what do you do?
It's like there's two things, right? The encryption piece, of course, if no one can read your text messages, then they can't position advertising to you. But then additionally, we know that texting is a very tough place. Even in text-based social media is a very tough thing to monetize. Insert Twitter for the past nearly 20 years at this point. You couldn't necessarily control what people's advertising was going to be next to and things like that. That's one of the reasons that business really struggled in that way, and I think has continued to struggle despite the change in ownership. And if you extend that to what's happening with WhatsApp as well, It's also tough. You don't really want to see an ad as you're scrolling through text messages in a group chat. It doesn't work that way. It's the same reason why Meta and Instagram moved away from Instagram Live. It's too intrusive to see an ad that is in the middle of an Instagram Live chat. The best way that this company has been able to monetize its platform is the passiveness of people just scrolling through, and then maybe you'll see an ad that comes through. So many of the factors are just the complete opposite of what works with Meta and how it advertises. Let's take a break for our chart metric stat of the week. Today, we're going to talk about Lady Gaga, and that's for two reasons. First, she just released her latest studio album, Mayhem. And second, one of my wife's coworkers asked her if Lady Gaga is her generation's Taylor Swift. Now, on the surface, the question is kind of crazy. These artists are only 3 years apart in age, but when we do think about Lady Gaga's commercial peak, especially thinking about the crazy VMA outfits, Bad Romance and Born This Way, that whole era, that's 14, 15 years ago. So I understand the nature of the question, but what those young people may not recognize is that on the youth platform, TikTok, Lady Gaga has grown her followers in the past month from 11 million to nearly 15 million. From the beginning of February to now, the middle of March. So the youth may not want to admit it, but Lady Gaga is still out here. Let's get back to the episode.
The very nature of what you're doing on the app makes it really hard to insert advertising and not piss people off or just make the experience that much worse. But I also think even if we were to say, okay, WhatsApp will never have ads, I still think end-to-end encryption causes Meta trouble because getting businesses even to use, especially in the US, to use the app for chat and things like that, they also don't get to know anything about their customers. So, of course, their ideal thing would be to know about their customers, target those customers with ads. But even if there weren't any ads, they still don't even at this point get to know about their customers. I know we want to talk a bit about music artists, and just to bring a little bit about it in here, I think maybe part of the reason that it hasn't taken off for artists to use things like channels is because they don't get to learn anything about the people that are liking the posts in their channel. They don't get to know their location. They don't get any info. So why would they use a WhatsApp channel when they could create a close friend's story on Instagram and get all this data about those people?
Because the biggest artists that are on the platform now, or at least the examples that we hear the most about, are Bad Bunny and Olivia Rodrigo. Bad Bunny makes a ton of sense. He is the biggest Latin American artist that we currently have, and this is the most popular form of communication in most countries in Latin America. This is also a place to be able to sell commerce, sell tickets. The click-to-message and click-to-WhatsApp feature that Meta has been known for, that they've also been able to effectively have here, work very well for him, for something that is very much push. Let me push this on to the 8 million, 13 million people. The challenge, though, is exactly what you said. It isn't as specific as Facebook, where you can literally have and map lookalike audiences. You can look at the people that follow you on those accounts and be able to ascertain certain things about their demographics, their psychographics, and other aspects. You can assume some of that about your WhatsApp following based on who you know there and things like that. So in some ways, the benefit is that it likens itself much more to the one-on-one communication, but the downside is the things that you just mentioned.
Yeah, and there's a limited ability for it to be a two-way interaction too. Like, I know a lot of these artists, I was just before this looking up, like joining a bunch of channels, just poking around, and you can't message back. You can react to things, but it's very much a one-way channel. So in some ways, I think it's great because it's such a cool way for a massive artist like Bad Bunny to send little updates throughout the day, but not have to post it for the entirety of the internet and make fans feel like they're getting this personal dispatch. I love that idea. But from their perspective, they can't then use that to make decisions about where to tour next or who to collaborate with based on data, as they do with all these other platforms that give them a lot more information. So when you're an artist with 1,000 things on your to-do list and 1,000 platforms you're supposed to be posting to, it may be hard to choose WhatsApp in the end.
it's almost to the middle. And by that, on one hand, you have your social media platforms where it may be tougher to have your message reach the exact particular person that you want. But with advertising and with profiles, you can get a very clear understanding for who the type of person that you're trying to reach is. On the other side of the spectrum, you have your phone numbers, your emails, things like that, where as a standalone entity or even an aggregate, you can't necessarily pull psychographics and demographics on this. WhatsApp sits in the middle because of the encryption. You can't do any of those things directly. You can just do the one-to-many. But on the other side, you don't have the ability to reach and profile the audience in that kind of way. So there's some kind of benefits. It can be part of the stack. There are artists in Africa that have literally built their businesses as artists on WhatsApp. And that's really cool to see.
It's a really interesting paradox to be in, to have a company that is such a massive asset the way WhatsApp is, but have so many kind of roadblocks to being able to monetize it more effectively. By the way, I'm not saying that I think that Meta should get rid of encryption and take everybody's data on everything, but it's helpful to acknowledge the sort of catch-22 that a lot of companies are in today with respect to data privacy and growing concerns about it.
I look at the way and the reasons that the WhatsApp founders started the company, and similarly to Instagram, they eventually left due to some conflict that they had with just the broader Meta strategy. But a lot of the things that they said that they never wanted to do, such as advertising, are the same type of things that we're talking about, or even the thought of having something that wouldn't be encrypted in that kind of way. But if you think about where this lives with Meta, there's two different things here. And this is where it's probably good to talk about the value of this as a business, because people aren't going to like to hear this. But sometimes when I think of where WhatsApp sits within Meta as a broader tech company, it makes me think of where music and other forms of media sit within other tech companies too. Is this something that is generating a ton of money for these companies? Probably not, compared to how much more they're making off of everything else. Is it profitable enough to stand alone if there weren't other synergies? That's very debatable. I would have to look at the books to be able to confidently answer that. But if you listen to this podcast enough, you probably know where I stand on that. But then I think third, do they create some type of benefit beyond the revenue that they do generate? And yes, it's the stickiness of that particular customer. It's the brand that it creates, right? So similarly with the Apple Music, even if it doesn't create a ton of money, is the branding of what it creates something that just allows the people that are subscribed to Apple One more likely to re-up on their expensive pads, iPods, iPhones, etc., then yes. And similarly, if someone is using Meta's family of apps and they're using WhatsApp, does that make them more likely to scroll through Instagram and click through those ads that they see? And the data likely shows that they do. So that's where that real benefit may come from.
I've also been thinking about all this in the context of all of the different updates that Meta has been rolling out to Instagram DMs over the past month or so. There's been 20 new updates. It almost feels to me like there's a world where Zuckerberg is trying to turn Instagram DMs into WhatsApp without encryption. Another interesting ongoing theme to throw in here is something that people like Zuckerberg have been thinking about for years and noticing: people are over time shifting from a feed-based format to engaging in smaller communities and one-on-one messaging and group chats. That's been a trend for a few years now. Part of the reason they're doing that is because they're retreating from ads and retreating from all this obtrusive stuff that's coming into their feed. I just bring it up to say that it's not as if Meta doesn't have other messaging apps that are similar to WhatsApp in all of these ways, but it hasn't really been able to replicate the stickiness of WhatsApp with those.
Let's talk about the first thing you mentioned and then the second thing. So the first piece of it with Instagram improving and making changes to DMs feels like a tweak that they made when Threads really started to grow and become what it is. Yeah. Because Threads doesn't have its own DM feature. You need to access that person's Instagram DMs in order to reach them in that kind of way. And just given a lot of the content that's on Threads versus a lot of the content that's on Instagram, a lot of people talked about a bit of that conflict there, where you're basing the social graph from one off of the other. The use cases are completely different. You look at an app like Instagram, a lot of people feel like their feed is filled with people either trying to send them dick pics or ask for nudes and all this other crap that the feed is full of. So if someone is having some thought leadership style conversation on Twitter and you want to interact with someone, you got to be able to clean that up to some extent for that in order to happen. And that's where it's almost helpful in that aspect to think about WhatsApp similarly to how Apple thinks about where iMessage fits within its services. This is not something that itself generates revenue. You don't pay for iMessage. It comes with the phone. It comes with your iPad. It comes with your MacBook, whatever it is. The difference, though, is that it also creates that stickiness because, one, you have the pure like product design and visual aspect of it. No one wants to see green text. You want to see the blue text. It's clean. It's clear. You can add the emojis to it and all those things. But it's also the place where you can have those group chats and those conversations that can stay. And if you're Meta and you own that, then that's really valuable. But like we're talking about in this conversation, I think you really need to determine as this app continues to have its influence and growth in the United States and the e-commerce continues to grow, the long-term roadmap and strategy be trying to find ways to monetize this product further beyond just the B2B aspects and making it essentially free for everyone else and keeping it as something that keeps the user sticky, or will they feel more pressure to try to monetize it even more?
I think you make a good point that it might be enough and providing enough value to be that sticky thing that gets you into the rest of Meta's products. I think that overall, Meta and other companies that have such ad-focused businesses are facing pressure to diversify anyway, whether it's through like things like X having a subscription now to these business tools on something like WhatsApp. So I think that there is still pressure to monetize it. I think it's just figuring out what that should be is really tough. I think it's also, in this analogy, it's tricky because like with iMessage being part of the iPhone, they're in the same place. Whereas with Meta's sort of constellation of apps, they all compete for time because you can't use them at the same time. So if people are spending more time on WhatsApp, which isn't generating as much revenue, they're spending less time on the other apps because you can't use them at once. These apps are competitive. And some of them bring in more money than others.
Do you think that WhatsApp is competitive with any of the other Meta family of apps right now, though?
I think it's when you think about like Instagram DMs, like people might not be using both. I think people are, but I guess what I'm saying is like you can't use two apps at the same time and people only have a certain number of hours in the day and there's more and more competition for those hours. So if people end up spending more time texting, they're messaging their friends on WhatsApp and less time on these other apps as a consequence, other apps that are generating a lot more revenue for Meta, that could become an issue. I think we're in an era now where the competition for attention is so fierce that you're not just competing within your use case anymore. Netflix doesn't just compete with Hulu. It competes with Spotify and it competes with Fortnite. You know what I mean? Even though they're completely different things for you to be doing.
I guess if you're a parent company, would you rather own as many of those as possible and let them do their thing as opposed to trying to like sunset one or try to bring all the attention to the other?
I guess the benefit is that Meta right now is selling ads on all of these different channels, whereas say that it did create a super app, there would only be one place. So maybe it would actually be worse for their ad revenue to create a super app.
If you're a platform that has nearly half the people in the world that are using one of your apps, there's no one app that they're all going to use. But if you want to be able to extend that reach and find all the ways to maximize it, then that's probably going to be a family of apps. And you'd rather own that family of apps than not.
So I guess this is what we were talking about in another episode with YouTube, is like having all of these competing kind of products is a feature, not a bug.
And I think to some extent, sure, you could have certain things that fit inside, but because you acknowledge that the consumer behavior that people have when they are using different apps are just very different in that way, you would want to own the ones that are as distinct as possible, right? So predictions, thinking about the future, obviously we know where Meta wants to go with this. We know what WhatsApp's potential is and what the roadmap could look like. But what do we think the continued US adoption looks like? I'll be honest, I don't see a future where it looks like the type of impact that L'Oreal or any of these companies may have in Brazil or Argentina or Colombia or some of these places where WhatsApp is as fully ingrained as it is from a business perspective. But I do think there are certain things that they do well that we can see continue in that way. If everyone is already on WhatsApp and you have a clear way to be able to have people reach their fans and their audience, but you have people opt in if they want to be able to share their phone number or share their contact, then look at what you just did. You were able to find a way to have your fans connect with a particular artist without trying to create some new app, without trying to create some type of thing that just doesn't vibe with the culture. People here are using WhatsApp more than ever. A lot of them have it on their phones. Even the iPhones, we're seeing more and more of it. That seems like almost the least friction path to accomplish that goal.
I agree that there's a lot of room for adoption, not necessarily monetization, which I think Meta will continue to struggle with. But I honestly feel like one of the biggest barriers is just the friction of getting people to switch the main apps that they use. So I almost feel like the group chat and the community feature and the channels resonate really well with the current sort of cultural moment. It's just a question of, can they get people to switch? And it reminds me of that Super Bowl ad from a couple years ago where it was like the Modern Family cast. The joke was that they were switching the family group chat from iMessage to WhatsApp. And people outside the country found it like hilarious because they were like, this is as if for us, this is as if you were advertising like water. Like, this is such a thing that everyone uses. It's crazy that you're advertising it.
I think if I was to make a bet today, I think that this product within the Meta family of apps will continue to be most helpful as that sticky glue that keeps together and at least provides a home base for the conversation, as opposed to monetizing very deeply within the US or even Western Europe in that way because of the things that we talked about. I shouldn't put the US and Western Europe so closely together. I think there's probably more likelihood there than there would be in the US. But that said, was it 12, 14 years ago, the question was, could Meta monetize mobile effectively? That now seems laughable, but that's what people were wondering at that particular point. So you never know. If there's any company that has done a great job, for better or worse, of being able to amass a large following of users to its platform and then figuring out how to monetize it, it's Meta and Facebook, and they've done it time and time again.
Yeah, and I think you're right that maybe there doesn't need to be such of this extreme pendulum of all your data is getting sold versus end-to-end encryption. Like, why can't there be something in the middle where people who opt in to sharing their phone number with their favorite artists get it? It's a different relationship. I think there's potential there.
Tati, this was fun. Appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, of course. Maybe I'll finally go change my WhatsApp profile photo now. I think it might even still say, hey there, I'm using WhatsApp as the about. Dan just rolled his eyes.
And that's a wrap for our breakdown on WhatsApp. Thanks again, Tati, for joining me on this one. And thanks again to our producers, G and Eric, for everything you do to help make this show possible. And thank you for listening. Like we always say, if there's one person you know that you think would really enjoy listening to this show, not just our breakdowns on WhatsApp, but all of the companies and topics we talk about with Trapital, send them the show, send them the link. Word of mouth is the best way to grow. And of course, if you already do that and you want to show some love, if you can rate and review the show on your podcast player or listener of choice, it would be greatly appreciated. Thanks again. Talk to you next time.